Well, Mike, last month we talked about the leaked Supreme Court document written by Justice Alito that lays out the perverse legal reasoning behind his gang of justices and their intent to overturn Roe v. Wade, a ruling that could come down this month. And now, after recent horrific mass shootings in this country, the U.S. Supreme Court's reactionary majority is likely to make a ruling soon that will make the nation's gun violence problem even worse. So let's start with how these upcoming Supreme Court decisions are related. How are they related in their underlying political worldview?
Well, their underlying view is the present majority of people do not have power, and that a minority of people with a determined agenda based on basically fraudulent history is going to extend its reach to all parts of modern life. They're going to create a sort of gun culture. In their dream world, everybody could carry automatic weapons as you go. So just the sort of fear that women have traditionally felt about their ability to move through society is going to be extended to create an atmosphere of fear, because everybody will be able to exercise their newly discovered fundamental right to carry automatic and semi-automatic weapons in the world. That's their long-range goal, and they're making remarkably long strides towards that goal in this term.
Well, part of what seems baffling to many observers is the difficulty in even passing what Biden has called reasonable gun restrictions, like the limits on assault weapons. Or let's look at this New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin case coming up before the Supreme Court, likely this month. What's the reasoning there and what's at stake there?
Well, it's a remarkable political transformation. My granddad in central Illinois was a member of the NRA because he liked to go duck hunting. He had an English pointer dog, and the NRA taught him gun safety. He would, for 2 weeks a year in the autumn, it was one of his favorite pastimes. The NRA was a very traditional organization, focused more on gun safety than anything else. But over time, they have learned the possibilities of profit from fear. The NRA has become very adept at creating fear. They've learned that the creation of fear increases sales of weaponry, and the weapons makers have financed an expansion of fear in general and weaponry in particular, centered on the NRA as their spear point. So until 2008, there was no such thing as a fundamental right to bear arms. The actual constitutional language in the Second Amendment is that a well-regulated militia being necessary for state protection, the people have the right to bear and keep arms. So it was all in the context of a well-regulated militia, fear at that time by states that the federal government could overwhelm them. It had absolutely nothing to do with single weapons. Weapons at that time took about a minute to reload. They could fire one shot. But in 2008, Justice Scalia authored an opinion called District of Columbia versus Heller. That was the first case to declare that gun ownership was a fundamental right.
You mean an individual right and not based on a collective militia formation?
Right. He sort of forgot all about that critical conditional first clause. And they held that people had the right to own guns in their homes. But that opinion made it clear that communities still had the right to keep dangerous modern weapons off the streets. It said nothing in there about that would limit your ability to protect yourself. But that was not nearly good enough for gun worshipers. In this new case, the New York State Rifle Association, New York's had a law like California does and like many, many other states, saying that only people with specific needs could be licensed to carry a concealed weapon. You had to have, quote, proper cause. That law is being challenged. The new law wants not only to erase that particular ban that would preclude people from carrying concealed weapons without some reason to do so, but they're further asking the court not to rely on current public safety concerns. They have a whole phantasmagoric system of figuring history that involves citing to 14th century medieval English texts. Just like in the abortion case, they rely on Matthew Hale, a medieval judge who presided over witch trials, and his statement that abortions were a, quote, major crime triumphed the fact that in this country, for a couple hundred years, abortions, so long as a child had not yet, quote, quickened, was a common practice. And in the state of Oregon, as late as 1910, were, quote, not a crime. They pick and choose from history with particular fondness for medieval sources in order to justify the results they want to reach.
There seems to be a particular bizarre, cruel irony in the fetishizing of the fetus and the fetishizing of guns, these lethal weapons that have been used to mow down young school children alongside of this passionate protection of the fetus, the unborn. How do you understand how those two feverishly protected rights stand side by side? That seems so contradictory.
Well, they love guns more than kids. That's clear as a bell. To me, it's baffling, but it shows the power in this country of a dedicated minority. You know, a vivid example is Cuba, which is a place where most people, having no strong feelings about it, would interact with Cuba in the same way they would with other countries. And they don't, when considering where to go for a tourist visit, look at the nature of the administration of a particular country. But there are people in South Florida who care deeply about Cuba, who make it their life's work to overturn the present government, and they get their way because
they've had an enormous influence over our political system.
And it's the same way with gun fetishists. I mean, they exalt guns into like objects to be worshipped. And how and why they do that is a mystery to me. I think the most simple explanation is simply one of profits, that because fear motivates behavior, spending behavior, it's something that Facebook and other social media companies have learned. If there's stress and fear, conflict, that heightens engagement. And that means there are more clicks. And that means there's a higher rate to be charged for monetizing every individual who clicks. It could be simply that the increase in crime, which was real in this country in the late 60s and 70s, was exploited quite successfully by the NRA and continued to develop that fear even long after crime began to seriously diminish in this millennium. And they managed to keep the fear of crime high enough that people keep buying weapons. So there's been a tremendous expansion of weaponry. We now have more than 400 million guns in this country. In the teeth of clear evidence that right-to-carry states have higher murder rates, have much higher suicide rates, that violence is increased, and the obvious evidence of the Uvalde case is classic. There's an 18-year-old kid. He's not doing anything illegal. He turns 18, then he goes down to the store. He buys a weapon capable of spewing 16 bullets a second. He buys 1,000 rounds of ammunition. And nobody thinks twice in Texas, or at least let me amend that quickly. The powers that be in Texas have created a world in which that's normal behavior.
And a cost they're willing to bear. Let's talk about the costs to gun manufacturers and what's happening on that front. Earlier this year, families of the victims of the 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook School reached a historic $73 million settlement with Remington Arms. And this was the first time a firearms manufacturer has settled a lawsuit brought by gun violence victims since Congress granted the industry sweeping immunity from civil liability in 2005. But some observers have argued that unlike lawsuits against drug makers that have been successful and the tobacco industry and the opioid pharmaceutical companies in their role in the opioid epidemic, the gun manufacturers are much more fortified by this protection from civil liability granted by Congress. So what's the prospect of those lawsuits going forward, given how they are living, these gun manufacturers, in their own political fortress?
Well, there is a fortress protecting an army of lobbyists that have been very successful all over the country in 100 ways. They have managed to repeal the laws like the one at issue now in New York State in 2/3 of our states. So the biggest states, California, New York, still have them, but many, many states have lost them. most states have now been forbidden from allowing suits to go ahead against gun manufacturers. Their liability has been limited. There's a range of laws passed to protect gun manufacturers and to enhance their powers in virtually every state. And the Sandy Hill litigation was brilliant. It was very ingenious. They found an ad financed by Remington with had a kid holding a weapon, which contradicted statements that they had made under oath. So there were unique circumstances in that litigation, but it was very difficult, but it was very successful and I think should be pursued. There are always some avenue. There's always a new way. There's always a way to exploit statements someone made somewhere, and they should be pursued. But I think we have to think big, Jan. We have to think about limiting the power of the Supreme Court, which is acting now as that sort of national equivalent of the South Floridians who work solely and all day long on the Cuban issue. Their power can be limited legislatively. They can be limited in many ways. Not only can the court be expanded, but it can be, the reach of its opinions can be limited by legislation. We need to think like that. They're, of course, recognizing the unpopularity of many of their decisions. Voting rights are a key target of this new minority that is taking over. We need to think about somehow undermining the Supreme Court's power and somehow making this country more susceptible to what the majority of people in it want, and recognizing that we're no longer a rural white nation, that most people in Texas, as well as Oregon and California, live in cities and are forced to and are pleased by mixing it up with people from other cultures. That's the modern world that has been steadily increasing in every way for the last century. And this effort to hold it back, to pretend that it doesn't exist, to fantasize about what medieval England might have been like, is something that we need to strive mightily to stop.
It's sobering indeed and daunting what the forces arrayed and that are connected with the gun violence issue that seem to continue a campaign that has been traced to the Reagan era, and where government itself, the federal government, and the ability of the government to make and enforce laws that address public needs has become the enemy of the right, and dismantling the government, making government dysfunctional as a primary political project.
That's true. I think right now there is a conjuncture between the slaughter of young children at Uvalde and the U.S. Supreme Court issuing, as they will do in about a week, an opinion expanding weapon rights that would allow further opportunities for people like the killer at Uvalde to do what he did. It is something that we should seize as best we can.
Yeah. And to see in this the exploitation of terror and horror and terrorizing people as part of a right-wing worldview. Well, Mike, we'll continue to take this up as we continue with the left and the law. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Okay.